Jamie Drysdale. One times the puck by Jacob Markstrom.
A minute 15 remaining in overtime. Shot, score, Panarin! From the right circle off the faceoff. Rangers win 2-1.
TSN 1200.
How about that reaction after Panarin scored? That was like a we won a game in overtime in the playoffs reaction. Maybe that was a start the car moment, like, I can't believe we stole that one, man. We had no business winning that game except for Igor Shesterkin. Rangers beat the Leafs in overtime, 2-1. Welcome back to the show, everybody. 8:15 here on this Tuesday morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer, and let's go right to the phone lines and welcome our TSN Hockey Insider, who joins us every Tuesday and Thursday during the hockey season. We say hello and good morning. A presentation of the Myers Automotive Group to Mike Johnson. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning, boys. I'm still recovering from that Toronto-New York Ranger overtime. Do you remember, like, the first month when 3-on-3 was introduced? And there was no system, no idea. It was just 2-on-1 breakaway, 3-on-1 breakaway until someone scored. They all lasted 3 minutes. And then eventually the coaches kind of got a hold of things. The guys figured it out, how to play some defense. But that Ranger-Toronto game, that was like the first month of a shootout when they just were going up and down with virtually no defense. It was craziness. And it's just Shesterkin, what a performance by him to kind of steal a point. You're right.
Yeah, lots of fun for sure. That I think somebody clocked it at 2 minutes and 44 seconds straight, whereas up and down the sheet. That being said, do you like the way that are you good with the way 3-on-3 overtime is right now? Some people have advocated they don't like being able to take it back out of the offensive zone, too much regroup, or maybe not being able to take it out past center ice. Like, any issues with you on that, or do you like the way it is right now?
No, I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with taking back, regroup, passing your goalie, whatever. I mean, possession is the name of the game, and if you don't want that to happen, you try to implement some sort of defensive system that doesn't let it happen. I mean, there's opportunities to pressure up ice if you want to, if you're the defensive team. They're just choosing not to. The only thing I would do, I would be inclined to extend 5-on-5. 3 more minutes, 5 more minutes. Like, I know the players, the PA, are concerned about wear and tear and the same guys playing a few extra minutes, but 3-on-3 hockey is not hard on your body. No one's getting hit. You're just skating up and down the ice making plays. I think just a little bit more of it would encourage more games to end in that way as opposed to getting the shootout, which is the one thing I would probably prefer to do if I could be greedy in overtime. But I don't have a problem with how people are playing it. Maybe just see a little bit more of it so it ends more games.
My next question or kind of statement, Johnny, won't play to the locals, but it used to be, I think, when the European players first came over, when the Montreal Canadiens were winning a lot of Stanley Cups, that was kind of the hockey mecca. When you see Panarin as a bandit yesterday, and just overall, would you say for the European player that playing in Toronto and that whole atmosphere is probably a real big deal for a lot of guys at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But, I mean, I think that the traditional stops are all pretty prevalent still, what the European or North American players, for that matter. But, I mean, I think, if there's a team that has a history with Europeans, like if you're a Swedish guy and maybe you go into Toronto, you think about Matt Sundin, or you go to Vancouver, you think about the Canucks, and there's maybe some sort of draw there. I think the big markets, the big cities, always are of interest no matter where you're from. So playing in Toronto, playing in New York, playing in Montreal, playing in Chicago, like those kind of buildings, that kind of history generally appeals to them. And I think that's why you see a lot of guys drawn to play in those markets, Florida being one of them, Miami as well, European or otherwise. Like, those are good places to live. So I think that's, as much as anything, is why they might enjoy playing in those buildings.
Matthews didn't look like he missed a beat playing his first game. Eight shots, 16 attempts. I mean, he did everything but score in the game last night. We got a web poll question we're running today on the Rocket Richard Trophy winner. We threw in Ovi because, well, he scores a lot of goals every year. But who's going to win the Rocket this year? And we put only three names, Ovi, Matthews, or McDavid. What would you choose as we sit here this morning?
I mean, I think the percentage play is still Matthews. I mean, I don't know if he has a game again this year like last night and does not score. I mean, he just scores all the time. He's just so good at it. And you give him that volume of chances, he's going to get goals and more than one. I think it's probably McDavid, Draisaitl, Matthews. And I guess you have to throw Ovechkin because you have to throw Ovechkin. I still think Austin Matthews, but I said it last week, like, my value play for the Rocket is McDavid. He was like plus 750. good odds for a guy. If anything happens to Austin Matthews where it's a slump or he gets injured, can't play every game. Like, I think Connor's got a little bit of the Sidney Crosby. Remember the 1 year Sidney Crosby kind of like dedicated himself to scoring more? He went and scored 50, 51, won the Rocket. I think Connor wants to achieve that. And I think on that power play, if he can learn how to shoot one-timers as well, there's a very good chance that he could be right up there. But Matthews is the best guy, but I wouldn't sleep on McDavid either.
Do you like the feel? Well, first of all, Marner's energy, but do you like Richie with those two?
You know, I read Sheldon Keefe's comments about him keeping the pucks moving and, you know, a lot of plays, you know, continue on with him. And that's nice. It's nice that your coach is trying to advocate for you and make you feel good. I haven't loved it yet. Now, we'll see what happens when Austin Matthews plays, right? Like, I mean, playing with Tavares is different than Matthews and Marner together. So we'll see. I mean, Matthews was dominant last night. He was incredible. I haven't seen a ton of burst for him. He doesn't get into a lot of touches in and around the net, which is where he's good. Big body, pretty good hands. So I guess I'm still taking a wait-and-see mindset, but I haven't been blown away. It's not like he's locked down that spot by any stretch.
Big topic yesterday. We'd love to get your thoughts on what happened with the Leafs on the weekend, having to use University goalie Alex Bishop as a backup because they've run into salary cap issues already. A lot of people advocating for, hey, listen, we should loosen the rules a little bit. We don't want necessarily that to happen. A lot of people, other people say, listen, it's a hard salary cap. Everybody's got to deal with the same rules we've been dealing with for the last 16 years. Where does Mike Johnson fall on that argument?
I fall on the latter. Listen, you can organize your team any way you want. Like, you don't have to be put in a spot where you're pinched if there are injuries that crop up. Colorado played with not enough players last week. No one was going crazy over that. I mean, the Leafs elected to dress a backup goalie that would very likely not be involved in the game in any capacity, as opposed to dressing a regular goaltender and 17 skaters. Like, they made that conscious choice, and they know that if this came up, they would be put in that position. It's not news to the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Colorado Avalanche or anyone else. I think it's just part of the hard salary cap, and it happens. I'm not offended by it. I don't think it makes the league too bush league. The backup goaltenders almost never play anyway, so it's not a big deal to me. The only caveat I would put into that would be, while COVID is still going on, and if your guys are vaccinated, you know, if you test positive and you can't play for 2 or 3 days, but you're not going to go on the LTIR on long term list, maybe in that situation, if there's a breakout and 3 or 4 guys can't play, then maybe there's flexibility just for COVID related things. But not for regular injuries. No, I don't have a big problem with it.
Any worries about Tavares, or way too early, 4 games in?
No, way too early. Way too early. I mean, he's been such a consistent player. Even last year on the down year, he still had, by most measures, a really productive season. Age is going to be an issue for him. I think everyone understood that when he signed that contract, whether it was year 5, 6, or 7, you're hoping it wasn't going to be year 3 or 4. I don't know if we're there yet. I think we need to see the power play get organized, Simmer. I think we need to see the line solidify, and then we can have that conversation. And remember, he's also coming back from a pretty serious injury, more kind of a mentally, emotionally kind of injury. So we'll give him a little bit more time. But, I mean, at some point, the play is going to drop off. It's just a question of how much and how fast.
We haven't talked to you since last Thursday, and it was shortly after we hung up with you that Brady Tkachuk did eventually sign his deal with Ottawa. He's expected to play his first game on Thursday. How do you think DJ Smith should handle it in terms of just ice time, and what do you think we're going to see from Brady Tkachuk in the first few games?
I think you're going to be a pretty spirited young player, run into a lot of people. Like, I mean, I think, you know, Brady is a uniquely skilled talent player that, you know, the foundation of his game is kind of energy and work-based. So I think you'll see not a guy, you know, that's going to come in and try to, you know, stick handle around guys. You might notice that his soft passes are a little bit off. Like, he's going to put the puck in the corner. He's going to bang around to get it. He's going to go to the front of the net. He's going to bang around to get it. The same way he does when he's playing at his very best. If I'm DJ, I probably try to monitor his ice time and try to keep him around 15, 16. It'll be hard to, especially if the game's close, especially if there's lots of power plays, but just kind of be mindful of how much is out there. He hasn't played, I don't care how much Ann Arbor, how many first-round picks at Michigan, it's not the same. So just be mindful of trying to overextend him in any the first kind of 3 or 4 games. But yeah, I would expect to see kind of exactly what we usually see out of Brady. This is a very physical player battling for puck in and around the net. It's what he does well, and he'll do more of it.
I think he's going to be the next captain, John. I think everybody agrees. Do you slap the C on him Thursday, or do you like the approach of waning a little longer to kind of decide?
What are we deciding? He's the captain. I don't get this at all. I don't get why they didn't. Like, when he came out and did Frank the Tank in front of the crowd, they're chanting Brady. Like, just put the C on him there. Like, we know what's happening. I don't get what the delay is for. There's no pressure on him if he gets it. He knows he's going to have it. That's why, you know, they probably even talked about it when he signed his contract. I don't think Shabbat or any of the guys wearing A's would be like, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. Everybody knows it's going to happen. So just do it. Don't wait. Just don't make him play a game with an A. Just give him a C, whether it's the last appearance on the weekend or if it's going to be for his first game on Thursday. I think there's no point. The decision's made. There's no point in waiting anymore.
The NHL has suspended Evander Kane for the first quarter of the season, 21 games. By all accounts, he is not universally loved within that San Jose dressing room. He's still got either 3 or 4 years left at $7 million a year. It's a difficult situation for Doug Wilson in San Jose. How do you think that they're going to handle that with when the suspension is over, I mean?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I think they will take the next, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, that he's suspended, and they will explore whether whatever has happened would be cause to terminate his contract, not buy it out, but terminate it through some sort of clause violation, whatever it might be. I think they would take that route if they can. And it's not about him not being a good player. He was their best player last year, and he's still a really good player. I just think where that team is headed and the salary and everything else and the off-ice issues, they would probably be happy to move on without him. And so they'll try to explore that avenue. If that can't happen, because the contract's not able to be voided that way or whatever, they wouldn't buy him out this year. They may go the D'Angelo route from last year, where they just kind of send him home, pay him this year, and then buy him out in the summer. And that'll be a costly buyout for a team that has no cap space. I can't imagine there'd be many takers with that much term on his contract. On 1 year, you might have a team take a flyer and say, you know what? We'll try. If it doesn't work, then we'll just kind of move on from him. But I almost feel like it's past the point of him, you know, going back and playing and then maybe facilitating a trade. It feels like, you know, San Jose would like to move on if they can, and they're going to find a way to do so. I don't know if he plays again for San Jose.
Surprised he turns 31 next summer, Johnny. Do you almost see a crazy scenario, him heading to the KHL, trying to make some dough back?
Well, I mean, the sad reality is he does need money. I mean, he's gone through a bankruptcy hearing, and he does need money. So I could see if he did somehow get bought out or whatever his contract, like, and he's getting $1 million offer next year, he might be inclined to go there and say, I'll take my three or four tax-free in the KHL before I play for $1 million in the NHL. I could see that happening, and I feel bad. And, like, that's unrelated to that most recent vaccination issue. Guy's got financial problems. It sucks that he's 31 years old and he's made $40 million in his career and he's got to worry about playing for money. That's brutal. Some of the problems are of his own making, but it's still awful. And I could see him, you know, chasing the money because he needs to. And that's too bad.
Well, the season is exactly a week old. Most teams have either played 3 or 4 games so far. At what point it doesn't matter what team we're talking about, would you start to worry about your own team? How much water is under the bridge before you go, this is not working out like we thought that it would?
8 games, maybe, right? A tenth of the season. Especially if everyone's getting healthy and there are people, everyone's in the lineup that you expect to be there, then yeah, I think 8 games or so, you can start drawing some conclusions about what you're seeing. How we playing, who is good, who is up to the challenge of taking a step this year, who's taking a step back, what's our goaltending. So 8 games, about 3 weeks, and then I start to start making decisions based on what I've seen.
Are you keen to assess Montreal tonight against San Jose and start to get a better vibe? And looks like Hoffman's pretty close to playing as well.
Yeah, Hoffman back. I think Edmonton is a big part of that. I mean, he's not a superstar player, but they're thin on defense. I mean, you look at their defense now. They don't have, without Weber, without Edmonton, Sherratt's not quite as good. And Savard, as you like to say, Simmer, you're worried about his boots. Like, he's not the fastest guy out there. I am curious, though. It's been not a good start. Toronto was okay. Buffalo was awful. Ranger was okay. Suzuki and Caulfield haven't got on track just yet, and there's so much expected from them and of them. They need some good things to happen. They need to get it, to get on the board, but it's tough. I mean, I think a lot of people thought they were going to take a step back and have a hard time making the playoffs. Nothing in the first couple of weeks has shown me otherwise. They're going to be in tough this year. So we'll see when guys get back if anything changes, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a grind kind of year. They're going to be all on the bubble for most of the year.
Bergevin, no contract now. Rumors coming out in L.A. and all that, and, hey, it's Montreal. Will this at some point just become too much where you're better to just say, hey, move on versus finishing out the year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, but I do think rumor like that comes out that would warrant a conversation with Jeff Molson and say, all right, listen, are you setting groundwork for working somewhere else? And you know, there's some human nature there. There are relationships. There's conversation that might happen. But, I mean, he just signed Suzuki to an 8-year, $64 million contract. So he obviously still has the authority to do whatever he wants with the Montreal Canadiens. I don't have a problem with this lame duck GM stuff. Zimmer doesn't do it for me. Nobody has a problem with the player plan on the last year of his deal. No one thinks that he can't play and perform given his last year. So why can't a coach that way or a GM that way? He's been around long enough. He's not going to sewer the franchise in an effort to save his job or get an extension. He's past that. So I would not feel inclined the need to let him go or make a move because he might be going elsewhere next year. No, if you trust him, and they clearly do because they just signed that massive contract last week, I'd let him keep doing his job.
All right, good stuff. Where do you find yourself this week as far as your schedule goes?
I will be on the panel for the Sens game on Thursday night against San Jose, and I will be in Ottawa for the afternoon game on Saturday, my first trip in Ottawa, so it'll be a good week.
Nice. Is Mike Johnson a between the benches guy or are you an upstairs guy?
I am always between the benches when they let me go there. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Good. Look forward to it. A couple of Sens games coming up. In fact, the only two games this week. Thanks for the convo this morning. We'll look forward to chatting with you again on Thursday.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
All right. There's Mike Johnson joining us.
TSN's Mike Johnson on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Auto Group. New vehicles are landing daily, and Myers is upon.
It is. Welcome back. 8:38 here on a Tuesday morning. Talk some NBA. New season opens up tonight. Leo Routens from the NBA on TSN will join us coming up just after 9 o'clock this morning. Raptors, by the way, don't begin their season until tomorrow. All right, we got our contestant ready to go for our King of the Grill contest. So we say good morning to Randy. How are you doing this morning, Randy?
Good morning, fellas.
How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. Not bad, not bad.
Excellent. You've heard the contest?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you a barbecuer of some renown?
I'll be definitely evolving into a barbecuer, certainly with the Traeger, right?
That sounds like a hard no, Randy.
No. I barbecued just the other night, had some chili dogs on Monday night to watch the game.
Okay, that was, yesterday then.
That's right.
Are you a 12-month-a-year barbecue guy, or do you put it away in the winter?
Oh, I go camping all winter long, too, so why not barbecue all winter long?
Whoa, okay. We're apparently talking to Randy Outdoorsman right now. Okay, Randy, so here's what's up for grabs in our King of the Grill contest with Capital Barbecue. It's a Traeger Pro 575 pellet grill. So, sideways barrel, chimney, hat on top, just to give you the visual. All right? You've seen these Traegers before?
No, I heard about it on the Dan Patrick show, but They always gave it away, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. Well, what Dan Patrick does is good for us, too. So, anyway, it's a beautiful machine. You could qualify for it right now, Randy. Here's the way the contest works. I've got a skill testing question for you. If you answer it correctly, you're going to be into the grand prize draw that we're going to have a week from Monday. One person will win the Traeger grill. Okay, are you ready?
All right.
All right, you got to get this one right. Here we go. Which is not a real barbecue sauce? Which is not a real barbecue sauce? Is it A, Bullseye barbecue sauce, or is it B, Stutzla barbecue sauce, that sauce specifically for your schnitzel? Is it Bullseye barbecue sauce, Randy, or Stutzla barbecue sauce? What is not a real barbecue sauce? Randy, what's your answer?
I have to go with the Stutzla sauce.
Do you want to repeat that answer, please, Randy?
The Stutzel sauce. The Stutzel sauce.
The sauce for your schnitzel?
Yeah, the sauce for my schnitzel.
Randy, that's absolutely right. That is not a barbecue sauce, although it is a business opportunity for Tim Stutzla down the road, potentially. But as of now, correct.
Trademark.
Trademark. There we go. Get Eric Macromello on the line, trademark lawyer to the Stars. Yes, Randy, congratulations. You've just qualified in our King of the Grill contest. Way to go.
Right on, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
You guys, too. Happy Tuesday.
All right. Happy Tuesday, indeed. Okay, there we go. All right, Simmer, do you have that one?
Yeah, I was real bad.
What?
Hammer.
What?
That was so.
What's the matter?
And as far as a Stutzla sauce,
I thought it was a tough one.
For your schnitzel,
yep.
Like you're going kind of honey mustard. Is that what you're going with, a base instead of a hot sauce?
I don't know. I think you go a little squeeze of lemon, so maybe I'm really not too sure. I think for me, I've always enjoyed my schnitzel plain.
Okay.
Nothing on it at all. I don't need it.
So you've never had schnitzel, you mean? Or?
No, oh, no. It gets made quite often.
Oh, okay.
It's beautiful on a Traeger grill, too.
You could do it. You could do it.
By the way, can I just say?
Of course.
Your voice is very squeaky today.
I don't know why.
Lack of sleep.
No.
Monday party with the guys.
You know, Monday
last
night imbibing.
He was doing a wing. They did wing night.
Or yelling at children on Sunday at the baseball game.
Well, I think it's a combination of the two of yelling encouragement at the lads on Sunday night in some chilly weather on Sunday evening, and then I may have had a couple of local brews with some friends watching the first half of Monday Night Football, catching up. Couple of guys I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, Monday night.
I know.
Big Bills fans?
Such a rare. I've got one is a Bills fan. The other one's a Titans fan.
What?
So they said, let's get together.
A Titans fan.
And I said, I'll be the United Nations. I'm the peacekeeper.
Who cheers for the Tennessee Titans?
He visited Nashville on his, I'm going to say 20th wedding anniversary, 15th or 20th. And then, boom,
went to
whammy.
A football game.
Titans? No, they didn't go to the football game. Just got a really nice hoodie.
Just decided that he wanted to adopt a
Titans fan.
I have to say, I'm not a huge country music person, but I do love music, and I love live music, any kind of live music. Got to say, I've never been to Nashville. Everybody that I know that's been to Nashville says music scene, food scene, sports scene, because the stadiums are right downtown. Like, you walk everywhere. Yeah. Is incredible. Simmer, of course, you've been there a million times, right?
Well, I should have moved there 25 years ago or my life would have been different. But, hey, it's become the sexy place here. They talked about that with Tom Brady wanting to go there. And for visiting fans, everybody wants to go. And when you go there, JR, if you were to go to the downtown, it's not a lot different than the market. Like, it's not some ginormous place. And when you come in from the airport, you're a little bit surprised on, like I said, it's an old country town that has become. Now, you go up to Vanderbilt University, very wealthy, but it's off the charts now. It's a place to live.
Okay, so give for those of us who haven't been, give us a sense of it. So Byward Market, is the football stadium the equivalent of TD Place? Like, are we talking that far a walk, or is it in the hockey arena? Where would it be as in the equivalent to downtown being Byward Market?
Well, if we're the hockey arena, then the Byward Market is where the hockey arena is. So right at the corner, I walk out of the front of the Bridgestone. Tootsie's is right there, Jared, the main drag.
Oh, it's
right
there.
The rink is
like
right
it's on
there.
Parliament Hill.
Yeah, and as far as a football stadium, I have never been, but to come into town, I'm going to say...
Everybody says you cross a bridge, apparently, and you're right there.
Yeah, I'm going to say if I walked over to City Hall right now, that would probably be where it is. Oh, like I say, it's not, as I said, you drive in from the southern side from the airport, you're kind of like, wow, this is, this is Nashville. But like I said, it has grown. There's Vanderbilt, where we stayed at the draft back in the day, very wealthy. But downtown, and like I say, it's become the really, really cool place to live for a lot of people.
So when I hear things like that, I go, wow, that's incredible foresight. But I also think, who's got that kind of land available to build brand new hockey arenas and football stadiums right next to your downtown, except it must have been a really run-down downtown before somebody had the foresight to go, you know what we should do here? We should build our sports stadiums right here.
And that Bridgestone Arena, if David went there in 97, it looks a bit on the old side, Jerry. I'm guessing it built in 1990. So the rink itself is 30-plus years old. And, yeah, for the stadium and football and then bringing it there, yeah, it would have been, you know, a big old... And for a lot of the people, I remember when Barry Trotz moved there, Jerry, all the money people live south of the city. That's where the Grand Ole Opry is, and that's where where a lot of lakes and beautiful homes are. So yeah, it was a stop to go into town. It was a one street where you just went up and down to all the different bars and partied and listened to great live music. And now it's expanded and it's just turned into an absolute destination for people to go for, you know, parties, groups of girls and guys celebrating.
Yeah. And that's what my buddy Chris goes down there with. He's got a friend that lives in Calgary and they meet every year in Nashville. They go to a game. And he says I got a text from a guy that said I was down there a couple of years ago, Triple D, for a bachelor party. Apparently, bachelorette parties.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Everybody, all the girls go down to Nashville for the weekend and get to whatever.
And what?
And just get down to whatever. Get down to some risky business.
What stays on the road?
Goes on the road.
So the men are now targeting that? No, understanding that that's going on?
Where the women go, the men follow. Yeah. That's not phenomenon. That's been going on since man came.
Yeah. Well, and also, and as you would expect, guys, when you go into the local places there, there's tons of people playing, and you just ask yourself, why does that person not have a music contract, right? I mean, it's, you know, the talent part, and if you want to go into where acts are found, and Tootsie's right across the street, of course, is the most famous. But, well, there's a bunch of places along there. Some great food and always just kind of a, hey, weather doesn't hurt either, Jer. Right?
No.
It's a pretty good spot.
Very temperate, as they would say.
Yeah.
Anyway, the home fans were happy last night as the Titans surprised the Bills, I think it's fair to say, with a 34-31 win. Incredible final minute of the game with the Bills driving for the potential game-winning touchdown on 4th-and-1. They decided to go for it from the 3-yard line and get stuffed. Didn't kick the field goal. Certainly a decision, which was much debated. Could have tied the game and sent it to overtime, decided to go for it. And Josh Allen doesn't get stuffed very often, but did on that play. And the Titans hold on for the win. So they improved to 4-2. The Bills fall to 4-2. More in the NFL coming up a little bit later on. But we'll take a break right now. Still to come, Leo Routens will join us. We're going to talk some hoops as the new NBA season will begin tonight. And the Raptors start tomorrow. Leo Routens will join us just after 9 right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Saturday in Hamilton. Tonight, 6 o'clock, Lever Sage is by with another edition of the Red Blacks radio show. We had head coach Paul Appelese on yesterday confirming that Caleb Evans will get the start on Saturday, despite the fact he was pulled from the last start, but that backup quarterback, or at least not on the roster, but will be on the roster, Duck Hodges, is going to dress for the first time in the game on Saturday. So much more on the Red Blacks coming up tonight between 6 and 7. Here on TSN 1200. About 5 minutes from now, Leo Routens will talk some basketball with us. Raptors will start their new season tomorrow. NBA season tips off tonight with the Nets and the Bucks. And then the late game is the Warriors and the Lakers. All right. It was on this day in 1957. Maurice Rocket Richard became the first person in NHL history to get to 500 goals. Scored a power play goal in the first period in a win over the Chicago Blackhawks at the Montreal Forum. Maurice Rocket Richard, Hall of Famer. Bobby Orr, Hall of Famer, played his first NHL game on this day in 1966.
Wow.
1978, on this same day, October 19th, Bobby Orr got his last point in an NHL game. His career, of course, ruined by knee injuries, unfortunately. Man, if they had the technology now, the medical know-how now, now, think of what that could have done for Bobby Orr, right, whose career was cut short. He only played 645 NHL games.
Yeah, and all those clips he took on the knee, the hit by Pat Quinn is what Hammer keeps talking about. I never even knew that was Pat till I worked with him. And sadly, that last goal ended up, or last point came in a Chicago Blackhawks uniform, which even for me, JR, as a kid, seeing a hockey card of Bobby Orr in a Blackhawks uniform, I think he was sitting on a bench, if I can recall, was very weird. And when I played in Oshawa, it was really cool. In the press room, they had a live picture of a portrait of Bobby Orr, what he looked like when he played for Oshawa at 15. He was literally 5'7", 135 pounds.
Yeah.
Just a tiny little fella. Now, I didn't realize that he started in 66. Like, if you'd asked me, I don't know why, I kind of thought, 69, 70 would have been. I didn't realize it was that early into the 60s. So he was a game changer right away.
Absolutely. And of course, at one point, won 8 consecutive Norris trophies or something? Like, just utterly dominant. And, redefined the position, redefined the defense position, right? Which there were some great defensemen before him, but he was the guy that was like, hey, listen, just because you're a defenseman doesn't mean you can't skate up the ice and score a lot of goals and get a lot of points.
Yeah. and you know, there'll always be the argument. You can go to Heritage, and some people out west love Gordie Howe, and then you watch Maurice. The part that when you watch Bobby Orr, JR, and it really feels like in meeting him a little bit, I almost felt like he was embarrassed some of the stuff he did at times, right? Or he'd score a goal and he'd be like, oh man.
Sorry, guys, that was too easy.
Like, seriously. Like, he was on that level. And then, you know, for the guys, and hey, leading the league in scoring. Did he not lead the league in goals as a defenseman as well?
In goals, period, I believe. Oh, 1 year he got 46 goals.
Well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Yeah, like, it defied logic to understand coming in. And what was also interesting, I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't unknown. I mean, Boston had hit a bit of a rough patch there. Harrison and being from Whitby, Oshawa, and bringing him in, you know, everybody knew what this was all about, and later made the Esposito trade, and they were off and running.
All right. 40 years ago today. No, October 19th, 1981.
I know where I was exactly, Jer.
If you're old enough to remember, you probably do, especially if you're a baseball fan. It was a Monday. Today's a Tuesday. It was a Monday. The Los Angeles Dodgers played the Montreal Expos in the fifth and deciding game for the National League pennant. This was a year in which there was a strike in the middle of the year, so they had a first half of the year and a second half of the year, and then the Expos actually won the so-called first round of the playoffs, beat the Phillies, moved on. Game five was at the Big O in Montreal. It was actually postponed for one day because of cold weather. So it was played on a Monday, October 19th, 1981. Ray Burris went deep into the game for the Expos. Fernando Valenzuela started for the Dodgers. It was 1-1 into the ninth inning. And was it Jim Fanning, I believe, was the manager of the Expos, decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to outthink everybody here. I'm going to bring in arguably my best starter in Steve Rogers into a tie game in the top of the ninth inning. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you I'm smarter. Two out. Guy named Rick Monday is at the dish for the Dodgers on a Monday, which became a Blue Monday.
Here's the 3-1 pitch, and it swung on, fly ball, center field. Dawson going back onto the warning track. Dawson at the wall. That ball is a home run. That ball is out of here, and a home run for Rick Monday, and the Dodger bench clears to congratulate Rick Monday, who has hit a two-out home run here in the ninth inning, and it appeared that Andre Dawson had room as he went back to the fence, and he just flat ran out of room as the ball cleared the fence.
And that, of course, is remembered. All fans of the Expos, if you're old enough to remember, or even if you're not, Blue Monday was 40 years ago today.
Yeah, started off watching at Henry Monroe Middle School, JR, the game, an afternoon game, carried on the bus, got home, I believe, watched the home run, and then went from Orleans to Leitrim Arena for hockey practice with the Gloucester Rangers, and listened to the radio. The fella called in and said, I want a request, tell me why I don't like Mondays. So that made a whole lot of sense.
The Boomtown Rats was around back then?
I just remember, it's just funny things you remember, right? I mean, it just was such an iconic moment, and that feeling. And I think, did they not get a couple of guys on base in the bottom of the ninth?
With two out, they got two walks.
And you know they're not going to score a run.
No.
But they're going to tease you anyway.
Yeah, there you go. So that was 40 years ago today. Blue Monday. Dodgers beat the Expos. And, of course, despite the fact they had just an incredible array of talent through a lot of the 1980s, the Expos did. A lot of great young players. Just never were able to push it over the top and get to a playoff ever again, unfortunately.
And almost every year you'd go there, it felt like it was the Phillies, the Pirates, whoever.
Frickin' Mike Schmidt every year.
Exactly.
Every year the Phillies needed to hit Mike Schmidt at a home run.
Yeah, even Murphy that played for the Braves. There's just somebody, they had a two-game set and they'd lose two out of three.
Dave Parker with the Pirates.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Willie Stargell.
There you go. All right, so that was 40 years ago today. Sorry about that, Expo fans. All right, 9 o'clock on the dot. We mentioned the NBA season is kicking off tonight on two fronts. Brooklyn and Milwaukee, Golden State and LA. The Raptors will start tomorrow against the Washington Wizards. And, of course, they're playing in Toronto again this year, which they did not do any of last year. Joining us right now on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline is one of the voices of the Raptors on TSN. We say hello and good morning to Leo Routens. How are you doing this morning, Leo?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. How was Wine and Twine or Twine and Wine this summer? Didn't see as many posts this year.
Yeah, Twine and Wine. No, they've been up there, and be a few more coming. So always having fun.
Leo, in 81, were you a baseball fan? Or I don't want to. I hope I'm right. Or were you in Syracuse? Were you still in high school, or where were you at that point?
I was in Syracuse, but absolutely a baseball fan. So I always regret. I always wanted to play baseball growing up, but I was just before like baseball kind of hit it, and I had an arm. I wish I could have played.
Much easier on the body and then on the knees, right, than basketball?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. All right, well, let's talk about the new NBA season. Let's start with the Raptors. They don't play till tomorrow, but just how good is it to have the Raptors back home, and what does it mean to the team back playing at home as opposed to just this Road Warrior thing they ended up doing all of last year?
Well, it's amazing if you think about it. I think tomorrow is going to be 600 days since they played there, and that's just incredible. And when you think of the pandemic and you think of what all the whole league and all pro sports went through, nobody took the hit like the Raptors did in the NBA. Nobody. You really can't overstate the importance of how that impacted the team as far as, you know, how you deal with players, how you deal with free agents, not having a home court at all. I mean, you're playing in Tampa. There's more people cheering for the other team, right? They don't care. And it's a limited crowd anyway. And the Raptors always had such a great home court. It was a great selling point. Players love being here in the city of Toronto. So just to have it all back, and, you know, you could kind of see it when the Blue Jays came back. So you saw the difference, right? It was incredible for the team, for the city. And so it's exciting to have it all back and hard to believe it's been that long.
Going
to
feel strange without Lowry in the lineup?
I think so, a little bit. Kyle's been such a mainstay for this organization. Yet, at the same time, at least for me, when I think of Kyle now, I think of Fred. Fred VanVleet's kind of been there. He's been Kyle's running mate. He's played at an all-star level in Kyle's absence whenever Kyle was out or hurt. So I think that cushions the blow a little bit when you have somebody, you know, of his caliber and stature to step in.
It seemed like it was up in the air as to whether Pascal Siakam was going to be back with the Raptors this season. Do you think it's cemented in? Like, is he going to be a Raptor going forward, or do you think it's potentially still up in the air?
Well, I never thought there was going to be any talk. Whatever talk anybody was saying didn't come from the team. So, everything I heard and everything I knew, Pascal is just working, getting his shoulder back and gearing up for playing here. Every team entertains conversation about every player. You know, unless you're the absolute superstar that can't be touched, every team is entertaining talks all the time. So there's all these people spreading rumors about who's going where and what's going on with Pascal. You know, frankly, they don't know what they're talking about. They throw something out. They take a line or a conversation out of context, and all of a sudden they make it a story. And, unfortunately today, with everybody being a part of the media, somehow, if you've got a computer, you're a media person now, or a cell phone. So I don't buy into most of it. I don't pay much attention to most of the garbage you hear. And as far as I'm concerned, Pascal is just going to come in and hopefully – start, you know, reaching the levels that not only we expect, but he expects. He's a talented guy. And, you know, unfortunately, at the time that he had to step into a new role, the world got hit with a crazy pandemic, and it affected everybody in different ways, and it certainly affected him.
Do you think he, Leo, more than anybody, back into routine and some love from the fans will go a long ways to elevating him? Because, to me, he's such a lovable guy.
100%. I think people forget that, like I said, he's a gym rat. He's a guy that was always in the gym, always working on his game, always playing. And when he wasn't able to even get in the gym and work, and then they went into the bubble, he was completely out of rhythm, more than anybody else. And it affected his play, and it affected his psyche. And then people really jumped on him. A lot of people just really came down hard on him, without really looking at everything that's going on. So I think getting some love from the Raptor fans, crowded arena, you know, obviously he's not going to be playing right off the bat, still getting back from his shoulder, but I think that's going to make a big difference for him, and I think we're going to see we're going to see a big jump in his play this season.
Talking to TSN's Leo Routens, NBA season begins tonight. Raptors start tomorrow. Raptors had the fourth pick in the draft, and they added Scotty Barnes. What do you think of him, and how much do you, what impact do you think he has on the team this year?
Well, surprisingly, I think he's going to have a significant impact. He's a very talented player. He sees and feels the game in ways that a lot of guys that have been around just don't. You look at us in the preseason, obviously preseason numbers, you know, don't mean a heck of a lot, but, you know, he was in the top 10 in assists. He led the team. And again, it's that feel. He's got a feel for the game. He also has an incredible NBA body. Here's a guy that literally can defend every position on the floor. And he's tireless. He's got this exuberance and energy. Quite honestly, the last player I saw come into the NBA with that kind of energy was Magic Johnson. I remember Magic Johnson, I think it was the first regular season game of his rookie year. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar hit this hook shot to win the game. And Magic, when running the length of the court, jumped into his arms, and like Kareem's going, dude, we got 81 more of these games, you know? But you see a lot of that with Scotty Barnes. And I think that's great because you got, you know, you can help a team in so many ways. But when you're a young player and you can bring that kind of energy, and you should, being a young player, bring energy. But the intangibles that he brings to the table, I think people are realizing now why the Raptors took him. And to me, in my opinion, when you look at the top four players, he could easily been the second pick in the draft.
It was just 2.5 years ago the Raptors won the title. Of course, Kawhi has left now. Kyle has left. Barnes is in, and there is an established core. Leo, where do you consider the Raptors to be right now in their competitive cycle as you assess them, especially against the rest of the Eastern Conference? Are they a legitimate Eastern Conference contender? Are they, you know, aspiring to that level? Where are they at, in your opinion?
Well, I think they're aspiring to that level. I mean, there's no question this is a bit of a rebuild, right? You only have four players that were here 600 days ago and that last played at Scotiabank Arena. So it's going to be, to me, this is going to be a very interesting, intriguing, and fun season. Is our Pascal, Fred, OG, Boucher, the guys that have been here, are they going to step in and rise to expectations? Are they going to do what everybody is hoping they will do? The new guys, like the newer veterans, like, you know, Gary Trent Jr., you know, Kem Birch, players like that, are they going to show us more than what we got when they came? And I think they had a significant impact coming in last season. And then all the new guys that are in, the younger players, like a Scotty Barnes, you know, like a Precious Achiuwa, players like that, what are they going to do, and how quick is their learning curve going to be? And when I'm looking at that, I go, you know what? This could be really good. They could surprise a lot of teams. They could really make a splash. Or because of all these different factors that we don't know about, it could go south really quick. So there's a lot of variables in there, which I think is going to make it a lot of fun to kind of see where it all goes, and hopefully it's all going to go well. I mean, I think there's a lot of potential with this group. I like the way they play. I like the fact that, you know, there's a lot of players with length. They're really going to get after people defensively. They kind of build a team for today's game. So the question is, how quickly can they all come together and again, live up to expectations?
I'm a Knicks guy because RJ Barrett, Leo, and I know you follow him closely. Where do you feel he's at, and where do you kind of feel like the New York Knicks are at?
Well, RJ keeps getting better, right? And that's not a surprise. I mean, he's a worker. He's a gym rat. He wants to be a great player. So he's coming off an excellent preseason. He's coming off an excellent season last year. So, you know, he's a player that you're going to see is just going to continue to get better. Just be that kind of a glue guy, that solid player that gives you a little bit of everything, and he can score. As far as the Knicks go, I mean, they did lose some key pieces, I thought, from last season. But, you know, I think they're going to be similar to last season. They're not making any great strides over last season. And, again, now that They now the people are going to be expecting a little bit more from them, and everybody's going to be prepared. There'll be no surprises when you play the Knicks. It'll be interesting how they do. But, again, I don't see any more than what we saw last year.
If the Brooklyn Nets had Kyrie Irving, I think they would be the favorites to come out of the East. We have no idea how this is all going to play itself out, but what do you make of where Kyrie Irving is at and where the Nets are at this point?
Well, I think a lot of people still feel the Nets are the favorite to come out of the East, even over Milwaukee. I mean, Kevin Durant is no question 100% back. He had, you know, obviously with the Olympic team, he played extremely well, and he, you know, he's ready for a great season. And, you know, having James Harden as your sidekick is pretty good as well. And they really seem to complement each other. And they have size and depth. So this is a team that's very dangerous. Now, Kyrie, you know, it's an interesting situation, right? My personal take is that, you know, Kyrie's often been about Kyrie. And this kind of situation screams a little bit of that. And, you know, the vaccine is not about you. The vaccine is for the good of everybody around you. And we have to understand that. And, you know, he's never been the most durable of players. If he has an extended season, it usually catches him in the playoffs. If he has a good, you know, he's got to have, he has significant time off. He's had a lot of injuries and things like that. So I wouldn't be surprised personally if, at some point, he gets the vaccine, but it won't be until he sees that there's a good window to come back and get into the playoffs energized and strong and almost turn it into, hey, you know, check me out here. Look, we're back. Look what we're doing. Like I said, because he's not the most durable guy, and that's been obvious throughout his entire career. He, you know, for him to go through a whole season and through a whole playoffs, it's just not a Kyrie thing. So, if he comes back, I think it'll be at a time where he can be fully strong and have a playoff burst.
Thoughts on the Lakers, I guess, star-studded, but aging roster and makeup?
Well, yeah, it's an aging roster, but I tell you what, I like the idea of having a lot of guys that know how to play and have been there. And what they've tried to do is have a lot of depth, and that's what you really need, okay, because you've got a lot of older guys. They're not going to be able to sustain heavy minutes or you know, the whole season grind. So collectively, if you have a whole bunch of these guys, mix in a few younger guys, the key is getting through the season. You know that when you have veteran players, once they gel, once they find each other and get comfortable with each other, you get to the postseason, you're not worried about home court, you're not being on the road, you've seen it all, you know how to play, you can handle the moment, you got, you know, one of the great players in the game in LeBron James. So I think the whole key is just getting through this season healthy and finding themselves. And hopefully their depth will allow them to do that.
Got a couple of, relatively new teams, certainly in getting to the final last year in Phoenix and Milwaukee. And, of course, the Bucks ended up winning it. What are one or two teams that aren't necessarily have a history of you know, winning championships and going deep, sort of marquee teams? Are you keeping an eye on potentially that this year could be this year's Phoenix Suns or Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, I think you got to look at the Miami Heat, right? You know, they've done a good job picking up. You know, you got PJ Tucker, you got Kyle Lowry, you know, they're a very good team. They got shooters. They play together. So that's a team that I think a lot of people are, you know, overlooking. They're not paying a lot of attention, and I think you got to be careful because that's a team that, you know, in the bubble went to the finals, and they're a much better team than they were at that point. Also, you know, you got the other teams like Denver. You know, Jamal Murray won't be back right now. You got Utah. Those are teams that, you know, if they stay healthy, play well. You never know what can happen. We don't know what's happening with Philadelphia and Simmons, and I think that's going to be an ongoing saga for a little while. But, you know, the one thing about, you know, we didn't used to say all the time, you know, you had your good teams, right? And you'd say, hey, these guys, you know, these guys are going to be good. They're going to be there. And you kind of knew that was going to happen. But now you're looking at, you know, the fragility of this league is something to be considered. You know, I think you can literally look at every team we're talking about, say, if they can stay healthy, And we see what happens when they don't. We see how quickly teams fall off and how dramatically things change. So more than ever before, that's a big variable when we're talking about all these teams. You know, look at the Golden State Warriors. I think the Golden State Warriors could surprise a lot of people this year on one condition, if they can stay healthy. And so, you know, more than ever before, I think that's something that's in the conversation. And you have to wonder, like, we're at a time now where, you know, training, conditioning, nutrition, sleep, all those things are factors that are taken into account and stressed more than ever before. And yet we're more delicate and fragile than ever before. So it's kind of an interesting scenario.
Leo, watching the national soccer program, is that kind of your hope as an all sports fan that basketball eventually get there? I know you've talked about the window for qualifying really works against Canada, but from a pride standpoint, was it kind of cool watching that last week and thinking, man, basketball will get there someday?
Oh yeah. I mean, hey, we're all, you know, I think all Canadians, you know, love watching that. It's exciting. And again, hopefully Canada has the talent that regardless of the windows and the depth, and they just got to keep building and they'll get there as well with basketball.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the time and the insight. Looking forward to a new season. I know TSN's got the Raptors game tomorrow versus Washington. You'll be part of the crew this year. Appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
Sounds great. Have a good one, guys.
All right, there's Leo Routens on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza is the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
If you had the draft tonight, Jer, I'm going to put you on the spot. Mm. And would you take R.J. Barrett over Zion Williamson?
The trouble with Zion is, can he stay healthy?
Doesn't something feel weird there, though? Like, just overall, like, I don't know. The weight, the health, the kind of roller coaster.
That he doesn't want to be there?
Well, that's true. And I've never seen him actually take a shot. All I do is see him slam dunk the ball. But going into that year, RJ was thought to be the first pick, right? And then Zion was so overwhelming athletically.
I think Zion was always the favorite to go ahead of RJ.
I think initially Hammer coming out, you know, coming into college, though. I may be wrong, but anyway, they were neck and neck. I just wonder. I've really been a fan of RJ Barrett, and it really looks like he keeps working. And he took some real heat from the New York media that first year, and he's just getting better and better.
Yeah, he had a great second season.
Yeah, I had to look actually to see who some of the top picks were. That was the 2019 draft. So Zion went first. RJ Barrett went third. I probably, at this point, might pick the guy who went second. Was Ja Morant, who went to Memphis, who's a guard. He's a fantastic basketball player, but unfortunately for him, plays in Memphis, so nobody knows anything about him except the most ardent of fans. So, but yeah, the thing with Zion is just the ability to stay healthy, right? Again, he's, I believe, injured to start this year as well. So, all right, NBA season starts tonight. Raptors begin tomorrow. Thanks to Leo Routens. 9:19 thoughts on what Leo had to say. Are always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN1200. Phone lines open whenever you want to chat with us at 750-1200. Still to come, we're going to call our grand prize winner for this week in our Sens Jersey Monday contest. So if you got at least one code word into us, stand by. We could be calling you before 10 o'clock this morning as we roll on Sports Radio TSN 1200.